So, Charles, I'm going to turn it over to you. I'll just note for those that are on the line, Charles did submit to us some full written remarks and will be providing an abbreviated version of those orally today. As I've mentioned previously, all documents that are submitted to us are available to the public upon request. So if folks are interested in the full remarks, we do have those as well. Charles, I'll turn it over to you if you want to unmute yourself and go from there.
Okay, thank you. Thanks to everyone for inviting me here today. My name's Charles Wittick. I'm a recreational fisherman from West Babylon, New York. I've been involved in various fisheries for more than 60 years, mostly in New York and the lower New England, although I fished all over the country. I've also served on a number of state, regional, and federal fishery management bodies and advisory panels. And over the years, I've gotten a pretty good idea of what seems to work and not work in terms of recreational fisheries management. Now, here in the Mid-Atlantic, we don't have, as you've heard, any in-season management. And in fact, that sort of management is disfavored here. If you're a for-hire vessel owner, you want to know that when you book a trip, the season's going to be open. If you're a tackle shop, you need to know how much to order. If you're an angler, you really need to know when you take your vacation, will there be fish available to fish for? And that's something in the Mid-Atlantic that's different from some of the southern waters, at least in the upper Mid-Atlantic, because we don't have many target species. And at any given time, some of them, like right now, we're looking at four recreationally important species, striped bass, bluefish, weakfish, and tautog, that are all overfished, making them even less available. So anglers are relying more and more on what is available, which makes in-season closure even more undesirable. In fact, the problem we have is if we have an in-season closure on one species, that will push effort and a lot of effort over onto one of the other species that is, and thus could lead to overfishing of another stock. So generally, we don't like it. And actually, when the Mid-Atlantic Council adopted its omnibus recreational accountability amendment a few years ago, I think it was in 2013, they prohibited in-season closures. Now, what we do have in the Mid-Atlantic, and when we talk about alternative fishery management measures, it matters, we actually have a living laboratory as to what fishery managers, what management measures are more successful. We have the Mid-Atlantic Council. It's governed by Magnuson Stevens. Its decisions are data-driven. It uses annual catch limits. It uses accountability to manage its species. And we have the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission that has no legal standards at all that it must meet, that has a much less structured fisheries management problem. It's more in the recreational side, aspirational management than anything that's has compulsory measures, and uses what might be called alternative management measures. And we can look at the relative success of those bodies to get an idea of what really works. In the Mid-Atlantic, we really have four recreationally important species. That's summer flounder, scup, black sea bass, and bluefish. All were once overfished, all were fully recovered. Bluefish is overfished once again, largely due to a period of low recruitment and higher than expected recreational landings. But a rebuilding plan is well underway. It should be in place by the 2022 season. At the ASMFC, it manages 19 species or species complexes that break out into 24 different stocks that are either support a recreational fishery or once did support a recreational fishery. Seven of those species, encompassing eight separate stocks, are also federally managed, so they're really managed the same way that the Mid-Atlantic Council manages. However, the remaining 12 and 16 stocks are managed solely by the states through the ASMFC. Of those 16 stocks, only three are deemed to be at the rebuilt sustainable or at least not depleted levels. Seven are listed as overfished or depleted. The status of the rest are unknown. In the case of the overfished or depleted stocks, none are subject to rebuilding plans with a deadline for the rebuilding to be achieved, and that includes striped bass, even though the striped bass management plan explicitly states that the management board must establish a plan for a 10-year recovery. That, because there are no legal standards, that could be completely ignored. The alternative management measures endorsed by the ASMRFC also tolerate overfishing. In 2017, they adopted a tautog management plan. Yet, even though the Long Island sound stock of tautog is badly overfished, it will allow overfishing to continue until 2029, and then only require a 50% probability of overfishing ending then. There's no rebuilding target at all. So while we hear people advocate for alternative management measures and often point to the ASMRFC as an example of the type of measures they are looking for, they can't deny the fact that whether you manage from the date the ASMRFC was established in 1942 or from 1994 when the Atlantic Coastal Fisheries Cooperative Management Act gave them the authority to impose their management plans on the member states, the ASMRFC has never in its history recovered a single overfished stock and then kept that stock at sustainable levels thereon. It came the closest with striped bass, which it rebuilt in 95. But what happened after that really illustrates the problems with alternative management. Striped bass did well when their biomass continued to increase through 2003. But then it entered into a long decline when recruitment declined, yet no action was taken to tighten up the regulations to match the declining biomass. Even after a 2011 stock assessment update and informed managers that the stock would be overfished in 6 years, they did nothing to change the regs. Finally, in 2013, an assessment said that both the biomass target and the fishing mortality target were exceeded. And at that point, they did adopt an addendum to the management plan intended to reduce fishing mortality on the coast by 25% and 20.5% in Chesapeake Bay. But the Chesapeake Bay reduction was never achieved, and anglers there actually increased fishing mortality by 50%. But because there are no annual catch limits and no accountability measures in the management plan, that excessive harvest was allowed to continue through 2019. At that point, the striped bass were overfished once again. Overfishing was occurring. But the ASMRFC, clinging to these alternative management measures, not only didn't put a 10-year rebuilding plan in place, regardless of the requirements of the management plan, but merely adopted a harvest reduction that had less than a 50% probability of achieving F target. There are still no annual catch limits, still no accountability for recreational fishermen, even if they exceed not only target F, but threshold F. Now, we hear alternative fisheries management touted by various organizations, but the proposals are always described in very sweeping, very general terms. We're told that annual catch limits are inappropriate for recreational management, lead to unnecessarily restrictive regulations. But what we're never given is any hard data to support that. When we're told that alternative regulations can adequately manage fisheries, the people who claim that never give us hard evidence, never show a stock status compared to peer-reviewed biological reference points to support the fact that alternative management measures succeed. At the same time, we can compare what happens at the Mid-Atlantic Council, where management's generally successful, and at the ASMRFC's repeated failures to rebuild overfished stocks as an example of alternative management really not working at all. The alternative management measures are often presented in the context of social and economic impacts. But we always have to remember that a healthy recreational fishery requires healthy fish stocks. It does that much more than it requires lax regulation. MRIP effort data, if you take a look at that, you'll find that effort tracks abundance. As a matter of fact, as one Massachusetts fishery manager noted a few years ago in another presentation, when striped bass biomass doubles, effort doesn't double, it quadruples. That is what matters, is abundance to anglers. If fish stock is not sustainable in the long term, the social and economic benefits that accrue from that stock are not sustainable either. I was going to talk about recreational reform. That's largely been done. I was going to talk about the control rule that we just had a presentation on. Again, you saw the presentation. I'm not going to make extensive comments on that. But the one note I will make is if you look at the Mid-Atlantic Council's materials on the control rule, it talks about when the biomass is very high, regulations would be set at the most liberal regulations, which you saw in the presentation, but the most liberal regulations preferred by anglers. When the stock is overfished, anglers would be constrained by the most restrictive rules that could be tolerated without major loss of business, without reference to whether that level of management could be tolerated by the fish, or whether in fact they would need more restrictive management to end overfishing and perhaps begin rebuilding the stock. Now, in all the cases, emphasis was placed on the stakeholder and what they would prefer and not what the resource needs. Again, no hard recreational catch limits and no real accountability. Yes, maybe regulations would be tightened down the road, but in overfished stock, maybe we need more, and that would not be provided. When we talk about MRIP, one of the problems we have is that MRIP isn't credible, as we've heard, not because it's a bad survey, because it's been tarred with the old problems of MRFs. And people just don't try hard enough, anglers don't try hard enough to make a distinction. I sit on New York's Marine Resources Advisory Council. I have a colleague who will oppose additional restrictions in fisheries and say, well, they're based on MRIP. He says, it's MRIP, I don't believe it, that's it. He won't listen to arguments, he doesn't want to listen to arguments, he just won't accept it, even though MRIP is valid, and you know your colleagues at the National Academy gave it a pretty good review a couple of years ago. But skepticism to fishery science is pretty typical. There we had a ASMFC Tautog meeting a while ago, and before the presentation could even begin, a Montauk charter boat captain, party boat captain, excuse me, got up and said, oh, just want you to know, and excuse my language here, we think your science is bullcrap. The audience cheered. They didn't want more regulations. They didn't care what the biologist making the presentation had to say. They knew what they wanted to believe. And that type of attitude is what creates a lot of the problems we have in fisheries management. Information and measures that lead to more liberal regulations that lead to higher harvests are considered good data and good science. Regulations that require reductions in harvest that lead to more restrictions are deemed bad science and bad management. This is one thing that Mike Wayne mentioned before. Education is sorely needed. Again, out of the context of this talk perhaps, but fishermen don't know what they how the system works. And quite honestly, there are a lot of people in the angling press that are feeding them bad information. We need NIMFs to stand up and provide better information more easily to the anglers. But we see the same people who embraced a very positive black sea bass stock assessment and demand that regulations be eased, completely reject the findings of a striped bass or bluefish stock assessment that said the stocks are overfished and fight any restrictions. Because again, they'll take the science that benefits their side and anything that causes them inconvenience, they reject. That's one of the problems we have with alternative management measures, is they seem very attractive because they will provide anglers with the freedom to overfish without consequences. Now, again, we see that at ASMFC. that, okay, maybe you have to tighten your regulations. There's no paybacks. There's no meaningful tightening. And so, sure, they're great regulations. No accountability, no ACLs. People love that. But it's, again, not good for the resource. But some of the criticism aimed at MRIP is justified, not because MRIP itself is flawed, but because it's used improperly. It provides reasonably accurate estimates when it's employed on a coastwide or at least a regional basis. But as you heard today, it's often used at smaller scales, state level, mode level, wave level. And when you do that, the number of angler interviews is so small that the accuracy of MRIP declines very badly. And despite that, the ASMFC in particular habitually allows regulations for species to be set at that state, mode, or wave level. As a result, you get the sort of regulatory whipsaw that people have described, because no, the numbers are not accurate enough to base regulations on, yet it's done. And as the manager from New Jersey described, you end up chasing F because you're basing your regulations on data that's improperly used. One of the suggestions people have made to enhance or augment or replace, depending on who you're talking to, MRIP, are electronic angler reporting systems or other voluntary reporting, but that's not really a realistic possibility at this point. We've heard some testimony on the Virginia COBIA requirements and relatively low compliance requirements. NIMFS noted a couple of years ago there's about a 20% compliance rate on bluefin tuna reporting. And I had read something a couple of years ago down in Alabama in the red snapper fishery, where during their state red snapper season, compliance, even though it was supposedly mandatory, regulators thought it was about 7%. So we cannot rely on fishermen to count fish. And the only way you could put a reliable system in place is something like Mississippi Tails and Scales, where boats have to call in before they go out, call in their catch on the return before they get back to the dock. And while that works in a state with a short coastline and not too many anglers, I'm not sure it could be emulated. In states with a large coastline and large numbers of anglers, it might just be far too unwieldy. But anything less than that is going to miss a lot of the catch. Voluntary electronic reporting, it's even less reliable. It's practically impossible to get a good representative sample from the volunteers. Again, as you've heard before, the people who are going to report are very possibly better anglers, people really interested in the management process, and that probably leaves out about 94% of the angling community. In addition, quite honestly, fishermen lie. And while sometimes it's unintentional exaggeration, I've heard comments here in New York where people talked about how they could game the system and falsify their angling history in order to gain more favorable regulations. So when you're talking about non-ground truth information, it just can't be trusted. Even for higher VTRs should be taken with a grain of salt. Again, up here, I am aware of four higher operators who will either underreport or not report their releases in order to keep the level of discard mortality down. There's also a case of willful ignorance. A few years ago, there was a New Jersey party boat operator caught with over 800 out-of-season black sea bass on board. Enforcement walked on a boat. He was like, yeah, I knew there were a few illegal fish. I didn't think it was that many. Out here in New York, out in Montauk a couple of years ago, we had two party boats. They were caught with a total of over 2,000 illegal black sea bass on board. And there was a little bit of outrage about that. And people said, oh, well, shouldn't we make them responsible for the overages? And they kicked back and said, no, customers won't let us look into their coolers. We have no idea how many fish they catch. Well, if you don't know how many fish they catch, how can you file an accurate VTR? And kind of in conclusion to my comments, now, In-season management is not going to be a reality in the Mid-Atlantic anytime soon. It is just not favored. Alternative management measures have already been embraced by the ASMFC. It doesn't introduce annual catch limits in its recreational fisheries, but its record shows exactly where that led to. Not a single stock recovered in its history and maintained at sustainable levels. MRIP is an effective management tool, but only used to estimate catch landings and effort on a coastwide basis. When it's used at finer levels, it brings management measures into question. At a recent meeting of ASMFC's Atlantic Striped Bass Management Board, some state managers argued that MRIP was good enough for what you heard, conservation equivalency, state-level measures. But when people suggested those same MRIP data should be used to hold the state accountable if those conservation equivalent measures didn't meet the required reductions, they were very opposed to it, saying MRIP's not good enough for that. Which also, management, and here when we talk about regulatory stability is one of the most important issues, managers need to embrace the concept of management uncertainty when they set recreational harvest limits. Now, we had an example just last year where the Mid-Atlantic Council's Black Sea Bass Monitoring Committee complained that it's hard to constrain recreational catch under high availability. It basically admits that they're not sure there's management uncertainty with regard to the measures they impose. Yet, despite that, they did not put a buffer to account for that management uncertainty when they calculated the 2020 recreational harvest limit. Incorporating such uncertainty would leave fish on the table. Landings would have to be lower. But at the same time, the stability that would give regulations year to year and the avoidance of overfishing that would lead to would more than offset the hardship of the lower reduction. The bottom line is the future of recreational fishing is contingent upon the long-term health of fish stocks. From what I've seen, both as an angler before the Sustainable Fisheries Act in 1996 and afterward, as someone who's been involved in the management process for many years, the use of well-considered annual catch limits and accountability measures is the only demonstrated and probably the only reliable means to constrain landings and maintain the health of fish stocks and thus the health of the recreational fishery. Thank you for listening to my comments.